To succeed, just let go. This is Willie Horton, exploring how we must and can take control of our state of mind and transform our lives. You're very welcome.
I doubt that there is a single episode of this podcast that doesn't extol the virtues of meditation. When I started doing this, helping people get what they want out of life, or to be more precise about it, helping people get what is best in life, when I started doing it 30 years ago, there was precious little scientific evidence as to the veracity of meditation. But in the intervening 30 years, there has accumulated an enormous body of confirmation from the fields of cognitive psychology and neuroscience in particular, with regard to what regular meditation does to the very structures of our brains, and how people who meditate regularly have taken an evolutionary quantum leap by changing the structure of the brain that evolution gave them, and thereby tuning into their lives, thereby being focused, properly focused, thereby paying full attention to what is going on in the here and now, as a result of which they disconnect the part of our brain that holds us all back from being the best us that we can be. Now, let me clarify what I mean by the best us that we can be before we go any further. We're talking about being the real you, discovering your true nature. People will often ask me, who is the real me? Or how can I discover the real me? And the answer is very, very clear. The real you is you without thought. And you discover the real you, you without thought, when you allow your thinking mind to drift off to where it belongs, out of your life. But I recollect a number of years ago, when I was doing a particular promotion for my online program, The Psychology of Success, somebody emailing me, telling me that they'd no intention of paying me for a meditation program. The Psychology of Success is not a meditation program. And even though I continually extol the virtues of meditation, meditation is no more than a tool, a very powerful tool, to enable us to take charge of our state of mind. And as a result of that, it could be said that meditation is a cure for all ills, a panacea. I know people will immediately say to me that couldn't be the case. But if meditation restructures the brain, changes the way the brain actually behaves, in other words, changes how our mind experiences moment to moment life, then as a result of that, given that as it is within, so it is without, when we take charge of our inner world, we transform our outer world, starting with the very fabric of our own bodies, in other words, our own health. And that's where I want to start with this conversation this week, because obviously, there are many people with whom I work who have health issues. Now, some of those health issues are self-inflicted. One could actually say, on the basis of what I said a moment ago, that all health issues are self-inflicted. So let's explore that for a minute before we go any further. But actually, before we go any further at all, let me explain why I'm starting with that. Because if you listen back over the 250 plus episodes of this podcast, you will hear me talking about effortless living. You will hear me talking about manifestation. You will hear me talking about flow. You will hear me talking about achieving your goals and objectives, or actually just letting them fall into your lap effortlessly. And yes, every single thing I've just said isn't just true, it is scientifically valid as to how anybody can achieve that state and how anybody can experience all those good things in their lives, and that anybody obviously includes you. But yet at the same time, I get an enormous amount of emails from people who have real, real world problems. And it isn't that they're saying to me, I don't believe what you're saying. What they're actually saying to me is that I've experienced this, that or the other. Wonderful things falling into my lap as a result of taking charge of my state of mind. But I still have big issues in my life. I still have big problems in my life. And obviously, one of the real world problems that many people will encounter, particularly as they get older, is the issue of health, or the issue of health and well-being, I suppose. Obviously, and I'm going to get into trouble for saying what I'm about to say, but in the vast majority of cases, obesity is a self-inflicted illness. But people will say to me, hold on, I'm overweight because of a genetic predisposition to being overweight. And yes, there are genetic predispositions to cancer, obesity, diabetes, Alzheimer's. There are genetic predispositions to so many physical conditions. And yes, medicine tells us, and this is a quote from a renowned doctor, that whilst genetics loads the gun, lifestyle pulls the trigger. I am genetically predisposed to being obese because my father was obese, but I'm not obese. I was genetically predisposed to suffering from stroke. My father suffered from multiple strokes. And yet, fingers crossed, I haven't suffered anything in that regard at all. What I would say to people who talk about their being overweight is look at your upbringing. Look at what you learned as a child. The number of overweight children that I see being brought around shopping centres or on holidays by overweight parents. Monkey see, monkey do. It's the same with the very way in which we put one foot in front of the other. And in this case, I'm not talking about putting our best foot forward or moving forward in your life. I'm actually talking about the physical activity of walking. Cognitive psychology has known for years, and there are many interesting studies on it, that we walk the way our parents walked. In particular, generally speaking, males walk the way their fathers walked, and females walk the way their mothers walked, because we learn to walk through a process known as snapshot learning. Now, we've talked about snapshot learning at length in this podcast. How we learn all the fundamentals about life, our world, how our world works, and our place in the world, for better or for worse. And generally speaking, how the most important snapshots in our lives, the ones that will deter us from discovering our true selves in later life, the most important snapshots in our life are taken between our second and third birthdays. But obviously, the snapshot of walking is taken around 6 or 7 months. It takes crawling infants to internalize that. And as any of you who have children or grandchildren know, it's a trial and error process before a little baby gets up on their two hind legs and walks like their mother or father. But we learn through snapshot learning. And generally speaking, the same goes for overeating and all that that leads to from the perspective of health issues in later life, or even at this stage, because there is practically an epidemic of childhood obesity, even in the early years. Now, I know, as I said, I will get into trouble for saying that, but the science is very clear with regard to how what we learn dictates our behaviour and how our behaviour dictates our health and well-being. There are a number of episodes in this podcast around the subject of healthy mind, healthy body. Now, I'm not going to point you to those episodes for the simple reason that were I to point you to a particular episode, I would take out of the equation the synchronicity that might lead you to listening to an episode that has a more important message for you. We've been talking about synchronicity over the last couple of weeks, opportunities for you, things that point you in the right direction at particularly propitious moments in your life. So I'm not going to recommend any particular episodes to this. Go and look for yourself. You never know what you might find. But yes, there are episodes in relation to how what is going on in our minds impacts our body. And kind of the obvious one is weight, not just from the perspective of seeing our parents overeating when we were young and impressionable, but being overfed when we were young and impressionable because our parents were overeaters when we were young and impressionable. But what about things like heart disease and cancer? Am I saying that these are self-inflicted? And if genetics only loads the gun and our lifestyle pulls the trigger, what are we talking about in the context of lifestyle? Actually, the most important lifestyle choice that you can make in your life, you can make here and now, today. Because the most important lifestyle choice that we make moment to moment is whether or not we are present in our life moment to moment. And that is a choice we can only make if we are in charge of our own state of mind or are developing our ability to be in charge of our own state of mind. Hence, the primary importance of meditation. But as I said earlier on, meditation is only a tool. I'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. With regard to heart disease, for example, research from the United States in the 1980s points to the fact that every single individual in a coronary care unit along the eastern seaboard of the United States could tell researchers why they had a heart attack. And it wasn't overeating. It wasn't lack of exercise, although they may have been contributory factors. The main cause of heart disease is stress. And that is because stress releases cortisol into the system. And cortisol increases the heart rate, increases blood pressure, and increases the production of fatty LDL cholesterol. Add those three things together and you're setting yourself up for a fall from the perspective of your cardiovascular system. What the World Health Organization says in that regard is that the low-level background drip of everyday stress will bring about the conditions that I've just mentioned and is a primary cause for heart disease. Or perhaps, should I say, actually, from the perspective of the research, the primary cause of heart disease. If you add the next five primary causes together, stress still wins out. Now, stress is something you do to yourself. I alluded to the lifestyle choice that we can all make a moment ago. Do I choose to be stressed or do I choose to be calm, cool and collected and present? Now, stress is an automatic choice that's built into us from an evolutionary perspective. But just because it's automatic doesn't mean I can't change it. I can change it when I begin to take charge of my state of mind. And as a result of regular meditation and the restructuring of my brain, the changes in my state of mind will enable me make that choice to be cool, calm and collected rather than stressed without me having to intervene deliberately or consciously. Once I've set myself up as a result of using the everyday tool of meditation. Now, the same thing goes for cancer. Research over the last 20 years would place 90% plus of cancers at the door of stress. And I know, because I work with quite a number of people who are suffering from cancer or, listen to this, have suffered from cancer but are in the clear as a result of taking charge of their state of mind. So I know from talking to people that people suffering from cancer know exactly the same way as I mentioned earlier on about heart disease. They know why they are suffering from cancer. Now, it often comes as a shock to them when it is first discussed that this is something they did to themselves. But the more they look at the science and the more they begin to experience the difference in the quality of their health and life as a result of taking charge of their state of mind, the more they realize that their health is in their own hands, or should I say their health is in their own mind. Now, I've picked on health and well-being for a start in the context of dealing with ordinary, everyday, real-world problems, because health and well-being are fundamental to your enjoyment of life. As I've said recently in this podcast on many occasions to my online program owners, there is no point in having wonderful goals and wonderful objectives and great plans for the future if you're not in the whole of your health to enjoy those things when they fall into your lap. But there are other real world problems that, on the basis of many of the emails that I receive, almost defy our ability to be in charge of our own state of mind and stay calm and be a positive influence on those around us. I said almost. I didn't say defy completely. I said almost. I'm talking about dealing with the behavior of other people. The number of emails that I receive and have received over the years in relation to how people's lives are being destroyed by other people's misbehavior. Now, the first thing anybody with whom I work will know is that the vast majority of people we encounter on an everyday basis, research in the United States would suggest 96% of people that we encounter on an everyday basis, could only be described as crazy. Normal crazy people, because they are not in charge of their own state of mind. And as a HR director said to me a number of years ago, he said, "Oh, you suddenly made my work and my life so much easier, because now I know what I'm dealing with when I'm dealing with the madness that I encounter in our workforce on an ordinary everyday basis. Now that I know that I'm dealing with normal crazy people, I can't expect of them to behave themselves properly. And the less I expect of other people, the less I will be disappointed." The fact of the matter is that almost everybody in our lives is a normal, crazy person. And, you know, evolution gave us a brain designed to ensure that we too are normal, crazy people. In other words, not in charge of our own state of mind, not in charge of our inner world, and therefore creating mayhem and chaos in our outer world. And by mayhem and chaos, I even mean the extent to which we can't change our lives or any aspect of them with regard to the goals and objectives that we set ourselves to better ourselves, and largely speaking, end up more or less where we were, or if we have moved forward at all, it's often as a result of real struggle. We actually said a couple of weeks ago in this podcast, and I've been exploring it in detail with my online program owners over the last few weeks, that you get what you want out of life when you stop wanting. Or if I can put it another way, you get what you want out of life when you stop trying. I talked about effortlessness earlier on. I've talked about effortlessness all over this podcast over the last 5 years. Effortlessness means that you don't have to try to get what is best for you. You get what is best for you when you stop trying. You'll get what is best for you when you start being in the here and now and only doing just what you need to do to allow what is best for you fall into your lap. But most people don't know that. Most people are hitting their head against a brick wall of their own making and feeling the pain every day. That pain comes from hitting your head 70,000 times a day against the brick wall of your own thinking mind. Research from California confirms that the normal crazy mind has 70,000 repetitive thoughts on a loop, running through it every day, mainly thoughts that were learned during that crucial third year of our lives that I alluded to a little earlier on. That's what you're dealing with when you encounter the nasty boss at work. That's what you're dealing with when you encounter the colleague who is stabbing you in the back at work. Or indeed, sometimes people are so crazy they'll stab you in the front and think they can get away with it. That is what you are confronted with when you are being bullied, whether it is at work or at home, or being manipulated at work or in the family environment. Now, work is easier to deal with than the family environment or indeed personal relationships, because you can always change your job. Or mostly change your job. And even if you can't change your job, as I've said to many people, you deal with a bully by not allowing the bully take your energy, because a bully only wants your energy and attention. A bully doesn't want to impose themselves on you. A bully feels so inadequate and unable to impose themselves on people that they will actually seek the attention and energy of others. And that's what drains the victims of bullies. And that's how bullying actually works. If you stop giving a bully your energy and attention, the bully may actually learn something as a result, or at least the bully will pick on somebody else. And we're not our brother's keepers. I know that isn't a very nice thing to say either, but we need to look after ourselves first, because if for no other reason, you are the most important person in your life. You need to look after yourself first. If, so to speak, you don't put your own oxygen mask on first, how can you help anybody else ensure that theirs is properly put on? You're the most important person in your life. But the carry-on that I hear in the family environment, from sons and daughters turning on their parents or walking away from their parents, breaking communication with their parents, bullying parents, bullying in particular older parents, from siblings killing each other, particularly when it comes to money and inheritances. The nonsense, the absolute crazy nonsense that I hear on a regular basis from people emailing me, telling me, yes, I'm meditating, but nothing's changed in the family environment. I'm meditating, but nothing has happened from the perspective of my relationship with my children or my siblings, my parents, or my wider family. I'm meditating, I'm doing my best to be cool, calm and collected, but God help me, when these people push my buttons, I lose control all over again. And my answer to everybody always is double up on your meditation, because the calmer you are, the better you'll be able to deal with the behavior of others. And the calmer you are, the greater the possibility that your calm will spread to others. The calmer you are in your inner world, the calmer your outer world will be. And you're not reacting to other people's mad, reactive, automatic misbehavior will change the dynamic. It might change the dynamic very slowly, because normal crazy people are awfully slow learners. Or some people have discovered that there is almost an overnight change. But what have you been meditating for weeks or months or years, and nothing has happened with regard to a change in the dynamic? Now, before we go any further, we need to take a short diversion into the world of bioelectricity, bioenergy, and quantum physics to explain that we interact with other people, obviously by opening our mouth, and sometimes it's better to keep that shut, but we interact with other people on an energetic level. And if my energy is being sucked from me by a bully, as we alluded to earlier on, either in the workplace or in my personal environment, then I'm simply feeding their need for energy. If my energy is not moving from me to them, then, as I said a minute ago, they may go looking for energy somewhere else, or more likely over time, the dynamic of our interactive energies will change the way in which their energy flows. But we interact with some people on another level too, and in that I am referring to the way in which we interact with those with whom we share DNA, because our mood affects our DNA. Our mood affects our DNA remotely. Our mood affects the DNA of those with whom we share DNA, children and our parents. And that means the calmer I am, the more present I am, the more I am in control of my inner world, in particularly in the family environment, the more I will be able to positively impact the dynamic of my outer world, and by that I mean in this context, the outer world of my interactions with those family members with whom I share DNA. That's an important detour, because people who have been dealing with recalcitrant family members sometimes for years lose heart and perhaps forget how energy and DNA is something that is shared between family members. If I look after the state of my energy, the state of my DNA, it is going to have an impact on my close family. And yet, People who are meditating regularly, people who have restructured their brains, the very fabric of their brains, have changed their inner world, have altered how they act in their outer world. Now, that's an important word I've just used, act. Normal crazy people's behavior is reactive and automatic. When we take charge of our own state of mind, our actions are real, they're deliberate, they are informed by our intuitive mind, and they are taken with the best of intentions. And yet, even at that, people will say to me, still nothing has happened. Now, the problem with saying still nothing has happened is it leads to frustration. Frustration is a body of thought that will drag you back down into, first of all, your own thinking mind, and secondly, more importantly, disrupt the flow of your own energy and the very fabric of your DNA. In other words, if we are looking after our own inner world and our outer world isn't displaying the kind of experiences that we would love to have in our lives, we need to hold the line. We need to stay focused. We need to ensure that we meditate. I mentioned a minute ago that you redouble on your meditation. It's interesting that many of the people to whom I have said that might have been meditating for 7, 8, 10 minutes in the morning, and they go up to 21 or 22 minutes. Not every morning, but some mornings. And once they hit 23 or 24 minutes, even now and again, suddenly things start shifting. And by things starting to shift, I mean the behavior of those closest to them alters sometimes in the most unexpected of ways. But as I said a few minutes ago, the less you expect from people, the less you'll be disappointed. And if you expect nothing from them at all, then you're going to be pleasantly surprised when these subtle shifts begin to take place. But you can't push it. Obviously, you can't push other people, nor should you be trying to push yourself. As I said a minute ago, we get what we want when we stop wanting. We get what is best for us when we stop trying. In other words, regardless of the slings and arrows of everyday life, whether it be from a health perspective or a relationship perspective, or from weight and fitness perspective, or indeed from the perspective of achieving any of the experiences that you would love to have in your life, what we need to do every day is ensure that we turn up to every day, because we never know the day nor the hour, nor the here nor the now, in which something significant will shift. If we're not present when something significant shifts, we won't be able to row with it, we won't be able to go with it, we won't even notice it. And we will say to ourselves, why has nothing changed in my outer world when I'm continually working on my inner world? If I'm not present when something significant shifts, I won't notice that perhaps the something significant that is shifting is something that the thinking mind would regard as insignificant. As we've said on many occasions in this podcast, there's no such thing as an unimportant event in your life. There's no such thing as an insignificant now. Our lives are lived moment to moment, only in one here and now at a time. People get so tied up in knots with regard to the past, and in particular, the past behavior of people. People go around not just carrying grudges, but nurturing grudges. And that actually augments the drip, drip, drip of everyday stress. And as the World Health Organization says, the one thing that will surely shorten your life is anger. But people are going around wrapped up in the past behavior, of a past misbehavior, of people who didn't know what they were doing. In other words, normal, crazy people, they didn't know what they were doing because they weren't in charge of their own state of mind. They were running around like headless chickens automatically misbehaving. If somebody using their mind or being abused by their mind did something to you in that way in that past, why, through thinking about it, would you continually do it again to yourself day in, day out. Bad enough that somebody did something to you worse. Only a half-wit would continue to beat themselves up. Or indeed, only a half-wit would continue to bang their head against the brick wall of the 70,000 thoughts that are running through our heads every day. You're better than that. In fact, you're best. And you'll only discover your best when you actually let go of all that nonsense that is holding you back. And that is why, even though meditation is just one of the things that we explore in the Psychology of Success online program, I've alluded to a couple of others like cognitive psychology and neuroscience. I haven't even gone into the world of quantum physics. But even though meditation is only a tool, it is a vital tool. It is a power tool. It is a multi-purpose power tool because it changes the very fabric of your brain. It changes your perspective on the here and now. And perhaps most importantly, it changes your perspective of you. Because even if you haven't experienced them yet, and possibly you already have, in one of these heres and nows, you're going to encounter the real you. And that, my friends, is a game changer.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. Hope you've got a little something to help you transform your life today.